Previously on The Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast, part two of our conversation of Duel of the Fates. Got it right this time, Sam. Don't have to say anything to me as we keep going. Join us as we continue here on part three. We're going to talk more about this script. What happens to Kylo Ren? How does he search for all of the power in the universe from one place? We're going to find out about all that and break it all down for you here in part three of Duel of the Fates on The Droids. Welcome back to The Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Alongside Chris Ryan and Sam, I am Mike. Part three of our conversation of the script by Colin Trevorrow and Derek Connolly from 2016 that never made it to the actual cinemas. The Duel, or just Duel of the Fates. We'll get it right here one of these days, Sam. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
You're glad I said something.
I'm glad you did. I'm very glad you did, Sam. But we want to get into our part three conversation. Rate and review us on iTunes. Check us out on all social media. And we dive right back in where we left off. We talked about in our last episode.
We left off that we realized that despite it being dated December 16th, this was probably written before the 2016 election, which is why there's hope in it.
Yeah, that's fair. That's how it ended up.
That's so, previously on the drawer.
Leia's message is interrupted, but we have to get back a little bit in the script to find out how that was possible, that her message could have been interrupted. We found out from Emperor Palpatine's message to Darth Vader that Kylo Ren suffered a great tragedy to his face and had to get a new mask, that he needed to go to Remnicor to find Tor Valum, who trained Darth Plagueis and Darth Sidious, and that would be where he would go and try to find this new great power that would help him control the galaxy. So we pick up where Kylo Ren has taken his TIE silencer alongside his new trusty droid and made his way to Remnicor to find Tor Valum. Now, this is a bit, we don't quite really know, because we haven't seen enough of the concept art, of what Tor Valum looks like. And in it, it says, a mountain of junk moves. From it, as if disguised within, comes Tor Valum, a 7,000-year-old, an alien of unknown origin, spinely intense, and muscles pulled tight.
Yeah, I know exactly what he looks like.
Have you guys, how far is everybody right now into Clone Wars?
I'm only at the end of season two. Is Tor
okay? Thanks for everybody weighing in. That's great.
I thought that was enough, that it wouldn't be far enough.
Yeah, I assume that. Well, I know Mortis is part of Clone Wars, right?
I'm also now, in season two. I now get what you're saying, Ryan, because it's like whoever. Yeah, because it's not far enough. So this reminds me of something. Guys, we're doing great. We're doing great. Keep it rolling. Keep the tapes going. Keep them rolling. I'm fine.
Sam's in some kind of mood. It sounds like he tore his Valum.
Oh, hey, look out, Claude.
But this does remind me of something that I encountered much later on. I think it's end of season four, maybe early season five, Clone Wars. And that's all I'll say about that. But I had a picture of something in my head.
Based
that I was
on
like
that, yeah.
In my head I was like, oh, I wonder if he's referencing this kind of this material, because it
doesn't
feels,
it say something too that he walks with his hands or something
that does happen, and that does not exactly remind me of the thing I'm talking about. But
I wasn't trying to disprove you, although now I'm letting you know how Mike feels.
But when I read this for the first time, I thought of Bendu from Rebels. I thought like the dark version of Bendu.
Yeah, one of those.
I haven't watched Rebels.
Don't you mean Kylo Rendu?
Hey.
So, Mike, I thought your synopsis of our last episode was a little too concise. There weren't enough puns in it. Mm-hmm. There weren't enough tangents.
Yeah, I don't think I really covered it.
I thought we'd really slow us down.
Well, famously, last episode, we talked about getting into the journeys that our various heroes were on, and we got up to what? Basically staying stagnant where we'd ended the previous episode.
By the way, who, like, recording the third episode, who knew that the second episode would be such a phenomenon? We should give a shout out to Vulture for featuring us. I mean, so early in the year to call us one of the best podcasts of 2020.
It was a bit of a surprise, but yeah. I'll take it.
To be up there next to Marin and Pete Holmes, you know, like, yeah. It just means a lot.
It's great.
It was really great that Adam Driver recorded that message for us
in his closet.
All those, yeah, all he did those in his presents.
Closet, yeah. Oh, we also just fans. We set up our Cameo, so if you guys want us to give
all the presents
happy
that we ordered
messages.
Our fans didn't arrive in time.
Oh, by the way, Ryan, I have a Cameo I need you to do.
okay.
Look, by the way, guys.
Oh my God, it's to Daisy Ridley?
You know, I really look forward to our future quarantine because that's the only way we're ever going to get through this whole script is all
exactly.
of us locked down in our homes in front of our microphones.
Exactly. Tor Valum.
Tor Valum.
Tor Valum, I hardly know him.
Oh, boy. So we have this interaction with Kylo and Tor Valum. We see that his face is muscular. He's walking on his hands.
His
some
face.
Kind of creature.
His face is
no,
muscular.
Don't they
say
all
like
of it.
Pulled
all
back
of them's
and muscular?
All of them's,
yeah,
all of them's muscular.
Yeah, they say it's
including, one assumes including the face. Sure.
Do you think it's like? Do you think it's like a current Sly Stallone look?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh boy, a little too much. Tor Valum had a little too much HGH.
Like his, you can see his face, like his just his eyebrows or nothing's moving, just his mouth.
Oh, the idea of casting Sly Stallone in this role.
He's just like
movie.
Bouncing a handball.
I just want to invite all my friends and make a movie. There used to be so many Sith, and now they're all dead. It's just me, you know. So I got to train you to get out there and you know, do what I did.
Oh, God. Back on track. Stay on target.
Yep. How are we doing to it? I don't know.
Oh, this, so, may be a, this may be a bonus episode. might not.
This might be the last.
Well, now
this
that we have the Patreon set up after the success of the last episode.
This may be the attempt one at part three.
Yeah.
Part three, part one.
Yeah.
Part three, return tab A, period.
So, what's part of the training involve? Chris, I know you got this. What does Kylo got to do? He goes into a cave.
He has to go into a cave. Like always is done in Star Wars, there's always caves nearby for masters to teach their students. He goes in. Who do we see? Who do we hear?
Hootie and the Blowfish.
Oh, my God.
I really got him.
No, I'm trying to figure out who he is.
Before we get to that, let's at least set up a little bit of what Tor Valum is talking about.
Lead us, Mike.
He's talking about by coming to Mortis, Kylo is looking for a power beyond what anyone has had before, which is to rule the galaxy without armies, without starships. And basically, Tor Valum is undercutting him the way that Snoke has done it before and the way that anyone has, calling him just kind of a child in a mask. You're not a Sith. The Sith are unrepentant, remorseless. You're haunted by your past, your very resistant existence. And he says, I have no regrets, but you lie. Until you sever yourself from the past, your fate will be the same as theirs before you, all the others who have tried to master this power of empty Jedi Knight armor, Sith Marauder armor, all sitting beside Tor Valum. And this is what really sets him up and why he needs to learn and asks to be taught. So Kylo Ren, in this instance, needed a teacher, and he got Tor Valum.
One of the things that's interesting in the description of this place, of Remnicor, is that there are, like, bodies of the fallen Sith. And in the, you know, it's something that, you know, Trevorrow and Connolly called out in the in the descriptive text, and I wonder how this would have been communicated visually in the film, like, or if it would have been as clear. But the script specifically calls out, like, for the, you know, the Sith, the body stays behind. There is no Force, you know, presence for the Sith. So it's almost like this further says, like, you know, Palpatine didn't come back. Vader doesn't come back. Like, or I guess he does because he's a Jedi. But like the bad guys who don't redeem themselves, they don't return as Force ghosts, and like their bodies are left behind, whereas the Jedi have this, you know, what is sort of depicted as a, you know, a peaceful oneness with the universe when they pass, which I thought was just an interesting, you know, note, that, like kind of footnote that I was like, I don't know how you'd make it, like, I don't know how you'd like say that to an audience, but it's really cool that they were thinking it and that it's there, it's built in.
Yeah, they have a little bit more than just an upside down pyramid in the darkness with flashing lightning.
I wonder if there'd be like he'd have signs that it was like piles, like one was like Sith pile and the other one was like Marauder pile. Well, you know, he's there for a long time.
Kind of like a Looney Tunes style. Is that what you're
saying? Yeah, the little wooden sign with a white white sign on it. Yeah, wooden post.
But so a lot of what Tor Vallum's talking about is the living force and Kylo Ren trying to earn and learn this power of draining the living force from others. And Tor Vallum is doing that throughout the early portion of this. He's stealing the living force and then allowing Kylo to do the same. So Kylo is learning by stealing the living force from the animals on the planet of Remnikor. And that's what leads us to this cave that you talked about, Chris.
Exactly. Just in the script-wise, this is kind of happening as the parallel stories are moving along. So we're kind of just picking one facet as we did with Rose and Finn. So we get into the cave, and then like any good Jedi Sith kind of battle, we see someone from their past. It's Vader.
Wait. Vader? I hardly know her.
It's Vador. And
you know, I don't know if you know this, but in German that means father. Maybe grandfather.
Vader. Vader. Okay.
So I think some cool
things.
German,
that okay accent to do.
You did the voice.
I think we're okay.
Yeah, we do.
That was Sly. So we go into the cave. We hear the breathing, which I think would have been a really cool moment on screen. I mean, we all kind of I think we would have expected Vader to be in this cave, but this kind of just confirms it. It's always nice to hear the breathing. Darth Vader comes up. He stands the ground, lightsaber up, unsure what's going to happen. Vader ignites it. Swings. Kylo blocks. But, like, this is Darth Vader, Kylo. You can't fight Darth Vader. Vader strikes him down. He struggles to move. Kylo's alone in this scene. Basically, he learns that, like, if he's trying to channel Vader, like, Vader's way better at being evil than Kylo will be. Kylo's alone on this.
Well, there's also something interesting, I think, where, you know, when Luke goes into the cave on Dagobah and faces Vader, you know, he defeats Vader but then sees himself. And when Rey goes to the cave on Octo, you know, she sees, you know, herself. And so this idea of, like, you know, Vader is Kylo Ren's projection of, you know, his greatest obstacle, himself, but he can't beat him. You know, it sets up this idea of, like, this mental block is still there. Tor Vallum is right. You know, he hasn't let go. He hasn't ever grown out of the boyhood need to, like, live up to what he thought his grandfather should be or would want or something. And it's you know, the idea of that there would, you know, this movie would have had, we'd have seen the imagery of, like, Darth Vader, like, beating Kylo Ren in single combat and standing over him with his lightsaber. I mean, that's like one of the most, like, just sort of chilling / badass moments you could picture in the sequel trilogy.
In cinema history.
In cinema history.
How? I mean, the person who runs consumer product goods for Disney, you know, must have lost their mind when this script went away, because Vader action figure back out there to actually be a current updated Vader's part of this again.
Yeah.
What? How? How do you not do that? How do you not have, is the scene you just described, Sideshow Collectibles, a standee of Vader over Kylo? That's something that the trolls would have loved. They would have eaten that up.
This troll included. I think that would have been amazing. This troll in the Shrek sense. I think this scene, it's kind of interesting as we're going through it. It is like Sith Yoda, essentially. he's kind of leading him through this path, giving him this kind of vague mythical lessons that these characters are actually finding out for themselves. But this one it's kind of the bizarro world version of Yoda and Luke.
And in that way, as a bizarro version, Luke, while not listening to Yoda, still has respect for Yoda and does not see Yoda as a way, as a means to greater power to defeat his rivals. Kylo does see Tor Valum in that way. And after having learning how to steal the living force from other beings, Kylo steals it from Tor Valum.
Exactly.
Yeah, he murks this guy. It's crazy. This is the 7,000-year-old, like, greatest Sith, you know, evil teacher who trained Plagueis on, you know, how to you know, manipulate essentially life. You
and
know?
He also has a great line of, like, I don't know who Plagueis is. I don't know what you're talking about, which is such a great thing compared to
that's kind of
the
fun,
tale
yeah.
of Darth Plagueis. Well, the man who trained him doesn't remember, or the beast alien.
Yeah. I do like that. Yeah, it's like this character's been so hyped up, and I think he probably is. It's the sentiment of probably a lot of people that watch Star Wars on a more casual level are probably like, I don't. Or even probably Harrison Ford. He must have written that line.
No, but it's a pretty cool moment. And is this where we get... is this where there's another confrontation with Luke and Kylo?
Or I don't believe
so. No, that's... Okay. Well, maybe there's one coming.
There might be.
Who knows?
But I do want to say, the thing about the cave, and you mentioned how Dagobah, you go back to the cave in The Last Jedi, this is a way that you appropriately bring in, as we talked about Coruscant just being the backdrop, as you mentioned, Ryan, that's like how you make this all tied together. This is tying it all back together again without it feeling shoehorned in.
Exactly. It's kind of also a way to tell the past without showing the past.
Yeah.
So the story is still moving forward, but we're experiencing feelings from the past.
Yep. And they do a little bit later show the past, and I think that kind of can work well in some ways, in some ways not. We'll get to that in a
I revoke everything I said previously.
No, I actually kind of love it, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. But that brings us back to, and we still haven't talked enough about Poe and Rey and Chewbacca on their mission on Bonadon, but that brings us back to Leia and her message of hope that she sent out through the galaxy after the success of Finn and Rose, the message that is meant to bring everyone together. That message is taken down, shut down, by Kylo Ren, whose new powers have allowed him to see the light in the sky. He closes his eyes, concentrates, holds out his hand. The rocks vibrate around him, and the light in the sky halts, stopped by an immovable force.
It's not necessarily a new power as much as it's an... I mean, maybe because he's more amplified. Powerful from sucking. It's like from like taking the life force, but it's like an amplified version of him stopping the blaster. This is a moment that I really couldn't tell if I like thought it was dope as hell or if I hated it. And I still don't quite know. You know, I think it's like amazing the way that like the idea of like someone taking down a Star Destroyer is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also like, I don't know. It would have to do a lot in the execution. I think in the movie it'd be dope.
It to me probably would have given me the same kind of like chill that I got from one of the best scenes of The Rise of Skywalker.
When she grabs the ship.
Yeah, when she stops the ship. It's like... Yeah. I think when you can surprise us, or like even when like Luke force projects, like when you can surprise us with the force in a way that like we know how you use it, like you can make mind tricks, you can do this. And there's a couple moments in the script where they do that with the force, which we kind of alluded to in our first episode on the script. But like, again, they heighten it in a really good way. And I'm kind of with you, Ryan. It's like you get a little bit of like an okay, like eye roll kind of thing. But then like just the visual of it and being in that moment, hoping so bad that that signal would have gone through to stop sound, I think is just very, very cool.
Yeah, well, I think, you know what? I'm with you, Chris.
Yeah, it's also...
I think it's cool. It would give me the same feeling that him stopping the blaster in The Force Awakens would give me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it comes down to Adam Driver and his physicality. I mean, we know, like, we do have that scene with the transport shuttle in Rise of Skywalker, and we kind of get to see, you know, a version of how he might have played something like this, you know, except in this movie it would have been motivated. And so, you know, I think, yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome. And it displays like such an awe, like such a overwhelming display of power that we haven't seen. I mean, like previous, the most the greatest power we'd ever seen was Luke projecting himself across the galaxy. And this is kind of on that level. This is reaching out farther, you know, than we've ever seen and stopping something, you know, so much bigger than yourself. It's cool.
Well, and it's also a moment that I think might take the air out of the theater if done well, as you're talking about, because you have this incredibly hopeful montage. You have everyone thinking, oh, all right, they're going to get everyone together. This is the next step. They're on their way to defeating the First Order, and there's no way that can change and then just taken away from you. It could be perfect. It could be just one of those moments in a theater where you're like, everyone you could tell felt the air sucked out of them because it was just so disheartening that they finally had gotten somewhere, and yet it's gone.
Yep.
All right, this is the moment that we step back. The only other loose end that we have not talked about before we set up, I think, really Act 3 for our next edition of the Duel of the Fates Breakdown podcast is Poe, Chewbacca, and Rey on Bonadon on their mission to help Rey find her way to Mortis by working with, I believe, as you said, Ryan or Sam, it's a navigator who has some sort of force powers that Poe is well acquainted with.
I'm not sure quite how well acquainted he is, but he knows of her. Her name's Nomi, and she's a force sensitive navigator. That this is interesting because he references that, like, you know, spice runners used to use her skills to, like, navigate safe passage, away from sort of any lawful entities in the galaxy. And I don't know if this was starting to hint at, you know, again, a sort of smuggler's background for Poe, which, you know, was one of the sort of clumsy, insensitive eye roll moments of Rise of Skywalker. And I think would have been the same here. But yeah, that's who he's taking her to see. She's kind of vaguely like a soothsayer. You get the idea that she's like one of the, palm readers you'll pass.
It honestly reminds me a little bit. I know this probably wasn't the case of like, the description is like Babu, like he's like a tiny alien child who appears older than five. Like, I feel like it's going to be this like great power comes from the least, like Yoda. It's like you don't expect this person to have the knowledge. But
you know who else it kind of sounds like? It's someone we talked about. I mean, we previously talked about them at length on the pod. Any guesses? We all know that Clint Howard appeared as a child in Star Trek.
Yes.
The original series. Right. And it's kind of that deal where it's like a child who's like kind of really powerful.
Could trade The Rise of Skywalker for this movie, but this movie would have Clint Howard in it, I'd keep The Rise of Skywalker.
No. Wow. No way.
That's right.
Yikes.
I said it.
Yikes. Yikes. I like to think it might.
Ryan's got a beef with them Howard boys.
I like to think it might look like Maz Kanata or something like that.
Yeah, there's no Maz in this. This would have been maybe a good place for Maz.
It would have been cool if they like realized Maz had that power. Because Rey would have had like discomfort at seeing Maz again, presumably. Yeah. You know, she's avoided her since running away from her and fleeing her legacy. It would have been a great place to put her.
It would have been awkward between her and Chewbacca as well.
Well, it could also be like, hey, Maz. Well, yeah, of course. Maz would be in hiding. Whatever her union dispute was in The Last Jedi, now they need to go find Maz, bring her back to the fold because she can help them find their way to Mortis.
She's hiding from a bunch of Teamsters.
Also, it's a great reason to put Lupita Nyong'o on your poster again. Yeah. So
that scene in The Last Jedi, though, it's like, who's controlling that camera? They're just like showing us like a little movie.
It's a droid. She pops up a little... Yeah, a little drone.
Okay. We all see that.
I think what we're saying is that we've punched up this script that we're really enjoying by suggesting that Nomi could have been a good place to put Maz. But what we get is Nomi, a sort of Babu Frick-like character that is...
Wait, Nomi? I hardly knew me.
You almost got me with the Vader one. I was like, you know who Darth Vader is, Ryan?
Sam, before we get too much into Nomi, I do want to say one of my
Want to move this along.
I know. A little moment that at the beginning, when first they all land on the docking array on Bonadon, is that Poe's pointing out, like, oh, you can't go out like that. You can't look like a Jedi. And so they go and get a, they say, like, a sari-like robe in the script for Rey, and the merchant shakes her head, closes Rey's hand around the money, and just gives it to her, because this is part of what we talked about in episode part one of our Duel of Fates, is how the galaxy is looking for hope and knows Rey and wants, or at least has heard of, there's another Jedi out there, and they want to support her. I thought that was a nice moment at the beginning of their first moment on Bonadon. Back to Nomi.
It's great. Is this before or after Poe eats the really spicy food?
Before.
Okay, great. Yeah, so we're with Nomi, and, like, Nomi kind of has some, as I, like, she kind of, like, shoo-shoos Poe away, like, anytime he talks. Like, it's like, yeah, I'm not reading you. I'm reading her. Like, she's, right? Is that kind of how the scene goes? It's
yes.
Been a minute since I've read it.
There's also a line in there that I think would have probably caused a bit of a stir, but it was a line that I liked and enjoyed. I think it was something along the lines of, like, the man will not speak.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's... Oh, keep that out of my Star Wars. Keep that... Look, Star Wars, it's ever been about anything, it's been... we don't need that, you know? It's about how anybody can achieve, you know, can be... I don't need to be told that, like, why is Poe got to get put down just because he's a guy? It's not his fault. Anyway, that's what those people sound like to me.
Well,
shall we move on?
before we get to Nomi, there is a very classic Star Wars, Indiana Jones type moment where Poe and Rey have to kiss in a market to hide from the mech troopers who are on Bonadon. So
it's because he ate that spicy food.
Yeah, but she comes in to help him out with a nice little mm-hmm. kiss, and so they're not someone who is very noticeable because they're kissing in the side. And you know what? I'm always up for a kiss to hide from being pursued. I like it. It's a trope, and it's a good one.
There you go.
It is, and this bit worked for me only because they have that sure. like funny exchange after where it's yeah. like, oh, did you do that? Oh no, oh cool. Like,
well, she says, did it work? And Poe goes, I mean, I think so. And just thinking of Oscar Isaac doing that line reading, I'm like, I'm smiling. I'm enjoying myself.
Yeah, yeah. You right. can see the raised see eyebrow, the yeah. start to lean in for a second.
I could see a really great...
I think
yeah,
so.
Their dialogue here is really good. And she's like, that wasn't... But then, interesting, though, it says Rey is lying when she says no.
Yeah.
So,
well, because they're setting them up. They're setting up the two
yeah,
of them
I know,
to have a love
but
story.
I mean, like, I could have... I didn't need to read that in the script. I guess that's just like, that's like direction.
You wanted to see that in the movie?
That's,
well, I mean, but I'm just
Derek
saying like...
Derek Connolly being like, Daisy, yeah. do you get it?
Yeah, like, that's just direction of the script. It's like, yeah, we would have, I think the foreshadowing there would have been
we'd
funnier.
Have figured, like,
yeah,
or maybe the actors, out. Maybe the actors would have figured it out on set, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe you had time to work that in. But they have their directions now. They know how to get to Mortis. They're hiding from the the Knife Nine people. The
yep. the Knights of Ren.
Well, everyone's favorite mystery box.
And in this, we also do
I like
get a
the
little
one
bit
with
of...
the shovel.
He's my favorite.
But
he's
Rey,
so
Rey gets a little bit more of a vision too of what's mm-hmm. coming for her on Mortis with Kylo. So in yeah. kind of convening with Nomi, she sees a little bit more of what's to come.
Yeah. Nomi is trouble. So they're attacking. It's a similar scene. It's like your classic scene at a busy market when the person that's chasing you finds you and you don't expect them to see you there. Right? They start chasing them.
Huh?
Yep.
They're killing people. There's probably a few Wilhelm screams of things flying off of people flying off of balconies.
There's some merchant pointing.
Yeah, exactly. Somebody's like, over there. There's always a faraway shot of like the bad guys talking to a merchant, and then they talk. He points over there and they're like, ooh. So
over
then
there's right at the
I guess
camera. Yeah.
I think what this kind of leads up to is one of the coolest parts, and again, this is another one of those like unexpected force powers, is when Rey kind of sees the writing on the wall here. She's like, I gotta go. They're either gonna kill us or we gotta split up. And basically, she uses the Jedi mind trick, right?
And Poe sees it coming.
And Poe kind of sees it coming. Poe's
like,
and he's like, you can't do this to me. And Poe has had his mind opened by Kylo Ren also, which is, he probably has a little bit of will there, but willpower. But we see Rey then use the Jedi mind trick on Poe to get him to go on his own ship, and then Rey steals the Knife Nine.
This guy, he's having his brain popped open all the time.
She murks out the Knights of Ren. Yeah. It's like they're useful in this movie because they're a threat and they're hunting our heroes. Yeah. And she has a 1-on-4 fight and she kills them, all of them.
There's also a great moment where Chewie like basically throws one and then like shoots it like he's skeet shooting.
It's so rad.
Yeah.
But it's also like, you know, I think this furthers, obviously we know the Knights of Ren are bad, Rey is good, but I read this scene where there's a ferocity in her. There's a violence now that like cannot be avoided by the stage of war we're in and all that's at stake. And so like this fight, like we do see once again a Rey that we believe is capable of dark things, and it's interesting.
Yeah, I think is this where she shoots lightning out of her hands? I believe, right?
Oh yeah.
Does she?
I know she does at one point. A blast of.
I do believe it says that.
Because she's like, she's fighting very intensely.
And it's purple force lightning that flows from her fingertips. It kills Hasaka Ren. And you see a flash of his skull through his helmet as the electricity destroys him.
She also
accidentally hits Chewie and he turns into a pile of dust, but then we find out that there were two piles of dust and only one of them was not Chewie.
Yeah, like another guy just comes, Constable Zuvio comes by and sweeps up the other pile. Goes, that's where I left my dust.
This moment, if I saw it in the theater, it would have broken me.
Yeah.
Like, I know that their relationship is new. I think they needed some work to get us to care a little bit more about their relationship, but those two actors are so winning to me that I know I would have been in. But so they have this moment where Rey has to go, can't get Poe, as you said, uses the mind trick that we know so well, but she's powerful enough that she can will an even strong mind. You know, we've always heard it's about weak minds, but she's got enough power to make this change. And so she's saying, you will leave this place and go back to help the resistance. And Poe is fighting it, saying, don't do this, no.
Yeah.
And my heart is breaking because then he does take it and he says he has to go. And, you know, he breaks through the sentience at the end, is what the script says, and he kind of waves off. And I'm just thinking of John Williams' score. She kisses him.
Yeah.
His mind is controlled by her. And I love it, as you said, a new turn on what we've already known. And something that makes as much sense as this is what makes it so powerful, because it's like, oh, yeah, we haven't seen a mind trick ever beyond a basic mind trick in a long time.
And she's like, she's using it for good, which I think is also like fascinating. Yeah.
Although it does bring into question the agency, you know, like that, it's not completely okay what she's doing.
That's also what makes it heartbreaking.
I think it's a last resort. She'd like, didn't want to have to do that.
She's also probably losing a piece of her and a piece of her.
Also, we keep saying that Poe has a strong mind. We don't know that. He's been mind tricked by her and had his head popped open by Kylo Ren.
Well, let's be honest. His mind
he's
is
like
usually
Ray Liotta in that scene in Hannibal.
His mind is usually in his cockpit, so he can't actually be that strong minded, right?
Yeah.
As Leia would say.
Another cool, just as we kind of wrap up this arc here, I think another cool scene or a cool aspect of this scene, and this is like it was a cinematographer on set when they wrote this, because he was like, it's always dusk here, It's like always magic hour. Yeah.
She's saying it was the cinematographer on set when they wrote this.
Room. Was he in the room when they wrote this?
No, I was. I was thinking I was going to jump on it if you didn't. Right?
Oh, okay, got my back.
Well, but Sam,
duel of the fates, Mike. I forgot. We got the grammar police here. It's the grammar constable. It is good foreshadowing.
Wait,
in the scene.
Grammar. I hardly know her.
Okay. It is good foreshadowing in the scene because there's going to be a showdown at dusk. Like, it's like that's how these things work. But it's what happened. So as soon as we land, we should know what's up.
But so, Sam, the construction of this scene, I know that Ray and Poe is not the direction you felt like it should go, and you also felt like it wasn't executed as well. Do you like the concept of this scene?
I adore it, and this is I've been waiting to just specifically say, I like the kiss scene fine because I think it has some good writing around it. I don't think it needed the kiss. I do think that with the kiss or without the kiss, and this scene works so strongly. I truly think it's just as powerful if they're not in love. I think it can be the platonic love of like friends in arms. I think that if you put this in, I wish I had a better like actual like war movie reference. But if you put this in like a Saving Private Ryan
Pacific
or something,
Rim.
If you, mm-hmm. but like between just two friends who respect each other and who have agreed. You put this in Lord of the Rings, and Sam and Frodo, one of them says, go, I don't want you here anymore. When it's telling a
I'm
friend to leave,
alone,
and then,
Sam.
And then forcing, and then forcing the friend
yeah.
to actually leave. And like, I feel like I'm a little bit splitting hairs here. I'm just talking about the actual kind of insinuation of romantic love. Is to me unnecessary, and I don't think it adds to this. But I think this scene is so strong.
I agree.
I think the sentiment of the scene carries through. I think the Rey's arc through a lot of this has been like finding her friends and her family. I don't know if it has to be heightened to a romantic degree. But she does talk about love.
I'm going to jump in just because I'm going to say in this instance with Poe, I think it needed to be because they didn't have a strong enough relationship from the first two films. If this was a scene between Rey and Finn and they were still about their bond of friendship, then they have enough between the two of them over three films to make this work on its own. They kind of had to rush this relationship, and that's probably going to be to the flaw of it if it were made into a film, but they had to gain more emotional resonance between the two of them because we haven't seen them together at all in the first two movies. I know there might be other ways to do that, but I think that's why the love story to me pushes the stakes for their relationship further in this script than it would be otherwise.
Here's how I think you can solve it. Can I just say,
Mike, they would have told us about their relationship more probably in Fortnite.
Well, yeah.
I think like the fix for that, and again, like at this point now, I'm like speculating on how I would fix a script that never got made, which is crazy. But
no, that's the fun.
What I think you do there is you just establish earlier on that like through action, through the opening scenes on the on the ring, the Kuat ring, on the at the rebel base. You just establish that they naturally are simpatico. They work, they finish each other's sentences, sandwiches, whatever. and that idea that it doesn't have to be love, but it's just like, oh man, like more so than anybody, like for whatever reason, Poe, who's got his background, and Rey, who's got hers, they like jive on missions. They really work well together. And then this works more than if it's, than the way of like, because it implies a pass that you're looking for, right? Like there are shortcuts you can take without screen time, but with well used screen time, you can establish a really strong connection.
What do you guys have against love?
I hate love. Love is what ruined grandfather.
You're breaking my heart. Okay, so we have reached the conclusion of part three of our discussion of Duel of the Fates. This will continue on. How long, we really don't know. But where we are right now, Poe is going back to the Resistance with Chewbacca and BB-8. Rey is on her way to Mortis, where also Kylo is making his way to Mortis because he stole that image of where it would be from Tor Valum's mind as he killed him. Rey got it from the navigator known as Nomi, and then Finn and Rose are on Coruscant. How are they going to get away from the First Order now that they've alerted to their presence after sending up the message from the Jedi Temple in the Old Republic? We're ready for Act 3 in Part 4. Of the dual face on the droids you're looking for a Star Wars podcast. That will do it, guys. This has been fun so far. I can't wait to see what we do for part 4, 5, 6, and 7.
Yep. Follow us on iTunes, like, rate, review these podcasts if you like it. droidspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @droidspod, Instagram @droidspod. Let us know what you think. If you've allegedly read it, also, please shoot us an email.
Also, if you do write a review, remember, bad, good, whatever it is, we're reading it. And you have to have a new review as of March of 2020. We will read that review on this podcast.
Yeah, and it'll be sometime, you know, maybe 8 weeks in the future. I don't know.
Yeah, whenever we
depending on when we're done with these recordings and how many we break it up to. Yeah, we got to release these with, like, the titles are like part 3 of ?
Well, we will find out how far we go, but we're getting there. We're closing out. We've got all of our setup, and we're ready for Act 3. What a pleasure it has been. I have so much fun going through this script with all of you because we're all experiencing this together. No one has told us what to think of this because no one else has really read this, or at least we haven't experienced it in that way. This has been a fun one. I can't wait to go back for part 4.
Same.
Amen.
Same.
Sani?
This has been the Droid You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Duel of the Fates, Part 3.
What they throw?
Annie?
Chewbacca.
Good show, guys.
Put it on my tab.